Okay, turn to number 17. Number 17. All right. Eli is going to read number 17, verse 2 and verse 5, just to keep it simple. Alan, read number 17, 5. Jonathan, Galatians 4:19. Alex, Mark 4:15. Nathan, Luke 16:12. And Caleb, John 15:16. Pastor Mitchell has a guideline of something that he recommends. I am sometimes asked about this by pastors on the field, and that is that for church planting, a church should be about 75 people before you plant a church. And that's, of course, not hard and fast. And I get guys that are worried because, you know, I was sent out of a church, only had 65. So they worry about this. So the point, there's just a very simple and logical point, is that in general terms, under 75, there's unlikely to be enough of a flow of converts so that the disciples see conversions. They're literally seeing people transform and are then able to develop the hands-on skills in order to be fruitful and effective with people. Because if you don't have that, in early days of ministry, there were guys that were sent out of very small churches that had never seen people saved. They didn't know what it was like to get people transformed. So to go out and try to reproduce something you've never seen is very, very difficult. So the scripture we're going to read is God making a choice in ministry. We're not even going to take the time to read the whole story, but God has some men. I'm going to pick who is the one, and it is go cut in the Bible, King James, a rod. In other words, cut a big stick. Take off all the branches off that, and then put it in the presence of God, and the one that bears fruit is the one that I'm going to choose. So God says, choose fruit. Number 17, verse 2 and 5.
Speak to the children of Israel, and get from them a rod from each father's house, all their leaders according to their father's houses, 12 rods. Write each man's name on his rod, and it shall be that the rod of the man whom I choose will blossom, and thus I will rid myself of the complaints of the children of Israel which they make against you.
Okay, and then you know what happens is Aaron's rod, this stick in one night, bears, shoots, leaves, and blossoms, and almonds, or fruitfulness, which is a symbol of a quick work and fruitfulness in one night. Okay, choose fruit. Let's talk about the indispensable factors. It's possible to have misunderstandings about ministry. Some people think ministry is simply based on desire, that if I want to be a pastor, or if I want it enough, then I will be, or in some cases, people, I should be. And they're upset because they say, I really want it, and I'm not being chosen, so there's something wrong. Ministry is based on information. That's another misconception. We know that in the vast majority of the church world, in other words, outside of our fellowship, is pastors are trained. They're selected. How do you become a pastor? Schooling. You go to Bible school, seminary, whatever term they use. It is a set curriculum. That means there's a list of things we're going to teach you. If it's Tuesday, we're talking about the Trinity. You just on and on, set number of course credits, hours, whatever the thing is. If you can pass the test, you are a pastor. And so that's the church world. in our fellowship, we do not operate by seminary or Bible school, and so we believe ministry should be hands-on, and yet I teach lots and lots of things. But the mistake that can be made in our fellowship is guys who, they like to learn, they enjoy the process of even asking questions, learning stuff, how to put together sermons, and so they assume that if I know those things, that somehow is better than knowing Bible school things, so therefore I'm going to become a man of God. And then, of course, the final misconception is that ministry is based simply on skills. And there are skills in pastoring, people skills, speaking skills, organizing skills. Those are things that you all need. If you think any of those are enough to make you a man of God, you're ignoring one of the truths or the hard truth about ministry, and that's this. Everything else is useless without people. If you have no people, I don't care how good your organizational skills are, your speaking skills, whatever. So, cut a rod. Go find a tree. There's a straight-looking branch. Cut it off. When you cut it off, you know what it is. It's immediately dying. Remove the branches, remove the leaves. It is just a stick. There is no fruit. So, he's making a point here. Ministry without people is pointless. Pioneering, I don't know if you understand the concept. We send someone to a city to which there are no people waiting for them. There's not a crowd saying, hey, I'll meet you Thursday. There's nobody there. No one knows he's coming. In most cases, no one knows he's coming. He doesn't know a single soul. So you're going to start from the ground up. So you can know lots of stuff. You can have lots of skills. In an empty building, they don't do you any good. You can organize and show on Excel spreadsheets, and here it is, and float. What? Who cares? You can speak. You know at the right point when to raise your voice and when to lower it and do all that. Without people, it's not going to do you any good. Taking a church. If you wind up taking a church, it's almost always going to be small. And that's almost invariably true. It's going to be small. In other words, you're not going to start out, we're not going to give you Chandler. Right? Starting out. It's just not going to happen. So, it's going to be a very small group of people, and in that small group of people, I predict that there probably are a handful of those who, they came along because they like the couple. They don't get it. They don't have a clue. You might even have a psycho or two. That's just the way it is. So, you have all these skills and knowledge. It does no good without fruitfulness or people. So God says in ministry, choose fruitfulness. That's the choice I'm going to make, and we're not even going to explain the context. And the reason why is this. You can learn other skills. It would be better, that's why I have a passion to teach men to preach now. It would be better to know how to do it when you get out, but you could, as many guys have done, learn how to preach when you're out. You could learn speaking skills when you're out. You could learn how to organize when you're out if you have people. But if you have no people, anything else, it makes no point. So, the scripture says there is a validating effect of fruitfulness. God says they're going to put these sticks, essentially. They're going to lay them before the presence of the Lord. You're going to come back in the morning, and when you open the curtain and you see, I'm going to make one of them fruitful. So it's a validating dimension. Other people see fruitfulness. That's true in a church. That before you go out, it gives people confidence. That when we send out people, if they have some fruitfulness, it's like, you know, God probably can help this. In after you go out, when you're pastoring, if people are criticizing you and you are not getting anyone saved, you're actually giving them ammunition. You make it much harder to retain people's confidence. The guy who is getting fruit and souls, it's much easier for him to keep people from causing problems, etc., etc. So, in discipleship, fruitfulness, of course, is hard to ignore. It's something pastors look for, and the simple reason why is fruitfulness is transferable. If you can be fruitful in Prescott, Arizona, I know you can be fruitful anywhere in the world because it's a transferable skill. Remember, David? I fought a lion. I fought a bear. So that's transferable. Never fought a giant, but I bet I could. That's fruitfulness. I got people saved in Prescott, Arizona. I was instrumental in their salvation, so that means that'll work in Timbuktu, somewhere else in the world. Let's talk about three aspects of fruitfulness then. The first kind of fruitfulness that we, of course, should strive for is personal fruitfulness. As a disciple, trying to be personally fruitful, that's where you learn to fight demonic resistance. You, of course, need to get people saved, and whether people make it heaven or hell, that's the most important. But there are great things that you learn, and one of those is you learn how to fight the devil, because there's nothing that he fights like fruitfulness. The devil fights it so hard, of course, because every person that gets saved, we talk about fruit, we're talking about people getting saved, that they are saved from hell. So you see a history of fighting for fruitfulness. Isaac, Doug Wells, and the Bible says that the enemy fought them. He called one of them hatred and another one conflict, because he says that's what the devil does. He fights, and finally he gets another one and they struck water. He called it Rehoboth, room. I became fruitful. You learn how to fight. You learn how to fight. There are demon spirits that blind. You ever wonder about this? I mean, this should be a simple. You are going to hell. You're going to burn forever. Jesus died for you. You don't have to burn forever. Any questions? I mean, come on. That should be very simple, right? And you say that, and it doesn't make sense. So the devil is blinding. In many ways, I told you about the kid that I witnessed to in technical college, and he, after witnessing to him, taking the long way home, he said, I can't relate to a single word you said. There was something blinding him. There was something blocking his ears. And so I had to learn how to fight. There are demon spirits that attack your confidence. This is one of the areas that people become very discouraged in, is in the area of confidence. So, learning to be personally fruitful, you learn how to fight. This is where you learn how to believe God. There's something so practical about fighting through. You have to have faith in order to believe God. And faith, which is believing or trusting God, implies that something is difficult. If it's not difficult, you don't need faith. So, there are powerful lessons. You have to develop convictions. Fruitfulness is one of those practical areas of life that you have to come back and say, I'm struggling, I'm not being fruitful. What does God say? Because what the devil wants you to do is say, well, you know, the people here, everybody's heard, they're all religious, they're all criminal, they're all into witchcraft, they're all, no one wants to be saved. But that's not what God says. You have to develop fruitfulness, and this is even more powerful than just getting people saved now. I'm telling you, faith, it's transferable. You learn how to get some people saved, by golly, you might fight some other demons in time. And you're going to say, you know what? God can do this. Because you learn how to fight through. So that's why it is so important to try to be personally fruitful. Second aspect of fruitfulness has to do with working with new converts. So, If you haven't personally gotten somebody saved, because you witnessed to them, you brought them, whatever, you need to work with new converts. When people pray, the battle isn't over. When we give reports, we say, and you know, five people gave their lives to Jesus. You know, technically, that's incorrect. We don't know whether they gave their life to Jesus or not. They prayed, which is good. We firm believer in altar calls. That's a biblical principle. 3,000 people were saved on the day of Pentecost. How do we know? He pulled the altar call and he counted. So that's a valid principle. But my point is, when people pray, the job's not done, as you probably have personal experience with. Mark 4:15.
And these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown, but when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately and taketh away the word that was sown in their heart.
Okay. Seed is sown. Somebody witnessed. Somebody did an outreach. The seed was sown, and Satan comes and tries to snatch the seed. It doesn't happen to every person, but there are an element of people that this is true. So, there are people that they lack revelation. They just don't. What is normal to you, you have been raised with, there are people that they have never heard. I pastored people in South Africa where immorality was rife. I had people that say, Pastor, my whole life I went to church every Sunday. Never one time did I ever hear that sleeping with somebody you're not married to is wrong. Never, never had an idea. Fornication, never even heard the word. So, they come, they get saved, they prayed, but there's some things missing in their hard drive. We got to input some data here. So that's and that has to be a miracle. It's revelation. Things that make sense. Their whole life now, they're coming again. There's circumstances. I marvel at this. Ugly brothers that get saved, all of a sudden beautiful women are after them. It's like, your looks didn't improve just because you prayed. I don't. Come on, man. That's got to be a demon. Right? You ain't that good looking, dude. So, you know. Job offers in Alaska when they're living in Arizona. You know. There's a million different things that can try to stop people. So, but the point is, it's a fight. Working with converts teaches us. So yes, you should work with new converts to get them revelation, to get them to the point where they can be saved. But you learn profound things about yourself. You learn things about you. The good thing about working with people is you're going to come to the point where you say, I can't do this. You couldn't do it when you started. You just didn't realize it yet. And so that is a very healthy ministry lesson. There are people that they come, they think, I'm going to go, what? You can't do it? You're right. You shouldn't. Get out of that ministry. Stop working with it. No, that's actually a good. You know this. All right. So you need to call on God, right? You learn about ministry. Ministry takes a miracle. I mean, that's... You learn this. Working with people, it's like, if God doesn't show them, it don't matter how much I talk. It doesn't matter. This takes a miracle. That is a powerful life lesson. Then you learn people skills by working with people. You learn that, you know, There are things that you can say and you can't say. And being wise in people, you learn that you can rush too fast. You can push too hard. Those are people skills. You're learning. That's one of the things that you learn. Galatians 4:19.
My little children, for whom I labor and birth again until Christ is for me.
Okay. I labor... And it gives the picture like a woman giving birth. I'm laboring. In other words, there's a struggle going on, until Christ be formed in you. These were people that had prayed. The Galatians had a salvation experience. He says, but you desperately need Christ to be formed in you. You need to get it so that you're not drawn away, whatever. So, working with converts. When my wife and I made a decision that we were going to be serious about ministry, this is one of the things that we did. I witnessed. I said, I want to be personally fruitful. But in the meantime, I am going to work with new converts. And we every kind of crazy thing, the people who give you an address, and it's a lie. They don't live there at all. We followed up on people that didn't want to stop being immoral. I followed up on homosexuals. I followed up on all kinds of people just because it was healthy for me to have to struggle and work these things through. And finally, we got some good converts. Finally, we personally won people to the Lord ourselves. But discipleship is tied to fruitfulness. God says, choose fruit. Finally, the third thought is helping other people be fruitful. Bible principle found in Luke 16:12.
And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own?
Okay. If you aren't a faithful man in what belongs to somebody else. So that's true in a church program. There are guys that, I want to preach, I want to preach, I want to preach, I want to be a man of God someday. But they don't involve themselves in what the church is doing. You could say the pastor's program. So if you're not faithful in another man's, how are you going to have your own? Then there's another principle here. Every disciple has to learn the lesson about competition and envy. So their disciples, they work this out, is if I help this guy with his outreach and a lot of people get saved, then he's going to look good. So do I really want to help him? This guy, he's slammed for time. If I help him with his new convert and they do good, then he's going to look good and I'm not going to look good. So these are the struggles. So I'm not helping, I'm not getting involved. That's a mistake, because the principle here is helping others, doing all that you can to help someone else be fruitful. God says you'll be given your own. Practical. Last thought, the will of God. The will of God for us is fruitfulness. John 15:16.
You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you.
Okay. Jesus says this is God's plan. I chose you. You didn't choose. I chose you. And so here is the... Being fruitful is not an unattainable holy grail, you know. That I don't know if you would know what that is in the... In the Middle Ages, there were these, knights that they're searching, supposedly a cup that Jesus used in the Last Supper. No one ever saw it, but it's, you're trekking through the sands, you're climbing the mountains, but it doesn't really exist. Fruitfulness isn't like that. This is God's plan. In our scripture, fruit was a miracle. Cut a stick, and a stick in the presence of God, overnight, branches, leaves, buds, fruit, overnight. Because that's the point. Fruitfulness is a miracle. God doesn't look at it like, how many times you witnessed, dude? Man, that's tough. How many converts haven't made it? Looking bad. He doesn't care. He's the God who can make a dead stick bear fruit. Right? You may have some flaws, but dead stick, I don't think you're there yet. So, I'll stop right there. So, many of the miracles in the Bible, we see many of them were miracles of fruitfulness in Abraham and Sarah and Zechariah and Elizabeth and on and on and on. Fruitfulness, because that's God's will. Okay, let's open for questions. Things you might want to know. Clear as mud. Yep.
What kind of things would you recommend doing with people that you've prayed with, like in terms of follow-up, I think?
Well, follow-up is in essence, it's forming a personal connection with them so that they are comfortable about coming to church.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's what follow-up is. I would love to believe that someone that prayed immediately get it. It's like, I understand the Trinity, prayer, the importance of daily prayer, Bible devotion, tithing, giving, world event. They don't. There are people that, I don't really know what the heck these people are doing, but I like you. And when we go out, you give me coffee. That's good. Coffee's good, right? So, or, you know, whatever. So, what you do is you are giving them a reason to come into the presence of God. That's really what follow-up is. You have every level. I've had people that, after we, Lisa and I banged our head against the wall with all kinds of crazy converts, we got this girl, she got saved, you know, she heard about tithing, is it okay if I start tithing, would you mind if I start coming to all three services, would you mind if I got baptized, you know. She was a miracle convert. We thought it was candid camera. We thought it was a joke, but it was really true. She lived for God. So, so the point is, a mistake that is made is when people pray, if I give them enough information, they're going to stay saved. So I'm going to explain to them everything they're doing wrong. I'm going to give them a list, 900 things that got to change in your life from this minute. That's a mistake. What you really should do is rejoice with them that they have gotten saved. Explain, this is the beginning of a new life, and form a relationship with them so that they feel comfortable enough to come to church. That's what follow-up is, in essence. Then they may ask questions, there may be things that come up, there's all kinds of things, but it flows out of relationship, which is why you have to learn people's skills and fruitfulness. Go ahead.
Haven't you said you work with people where they are, not where you want them to be?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just making sure I have that right.
Yep. So what do you think that means in practical terms?
So practically what I understand that is someone who... maybe, like you were saying, they may not understand tithing, or they may not understand, they're still struggling with, you know, alcohol or drug use, and so you're working with them on that before you're like, oh, well, you need to tithe and all this stuff, throwing more stuff at them, but working where they are,
yep.
So then they can get to where they need to be.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And, yep. So patience is a key. Patience and letting God do it. I have discovered through personal experience, headlocks, arm bars are not effective follow-up tools. I've tried. Yes, I've tried many things. Pressure. Some people, the only follow-up, they look in the file there, and the only thing they get is pressure. You gotta. What's wrong with you? You need to. Where are you? And that's the only thing they know. And it doesn't work. Or you can get them to come a few times, and then they resent you. So, you've got to form a relationship, and you have to make them feel. You have to have God do the miracle. Yeah, honestly, if you got nobody, you'll try anybody. I mean, that's the general rule of thumb. However, you use common sense. I try to save guys. Yeah, I can save you a lot of time. So when you are witnessing to somebody and you pray with them, yes, I would love to come to a church because the Lord has revealed to me in a Shekinah glory that the eternal verities of the end of the world. Yeah, you know what? I don't think you're going to like it at our church. If you just learn that phrase, it's going to save you a lot of time. I don't think you're going to be comfortable.
It's that church over there. Right?
It's that church over there. So, yeah, obviously there can be. If you have limited time in the day, you have to learn how to be wise. So, the problem is, it's not in an app. I can't tell you 3.7 visits and then to hell with them. That's not, you know, that's not, it doesn't work quite like that. And, you know, should I visit them again? You know, in general terms, there has to be some interest and a willingness to come. That helps. And then, of course, you have guys that there may be other reasons why you would not continue. But in essence, you got to throw yourself into working with people, because you will work with all kinds of people. And it will open your eyes to the need, and you just got to work these through. You know, however, there are guys that they always seem to find the weird ones. They have a talent for that. And honestly, I talked to some of our guys. It's like, you have the lost puppy syndrome. And you did it in our church. You do it when you're out. There's a crowd of 50 people, you find the odd bod. And that's the one you focus on. You find the guy who's wearing a tin hat, keeping out the aliens. And why is that? Why is that? Or they're attracted to you. There's a magnet in you. As you walk down the street, weird people are going, why is that? So... Somebody else. And the point of that is not that you get so picky that I won't talk to somebody unless they look like they step from the pages of GQ. Right? I followed up on some really weird people. Sorry? Well, I think, you know, part of life is self-assessment. So, I think that, like I say, I'm trying to think of all the weird ones. As we, my wife and I followed up on a girl. She did not want to be saved. She was in polite terms, she was a whore. And so she didn't want to change. And then I followed up on some guys. They were both homosexuals, and they didn't want to change, and some other people like that. So the point is, self-assessment is, God, this keeps happening. So, you know, if you get a long string and they're exactly the same type, there's, you know, you got to look at yourself. The point is, this is not acceptable. I can't keep just having people who don't want to change. I need some good people. Don't you pray that? You should pray that before you go on outreach. God, when I outreach today, you know who. The Bible talks about the soil. There were four kinds. One of it was good. Let us come into contact with good soil. Let me come in contact with Lydia, whose heart you already opened. I need to meet some people that are ready to get saved. That picture that I showed last Sunday night. When I get one good convert, I pray, God, you got to give me more Cedrics and Latries. You got to get people who, the night they get saved, they're ready. And so, not everybody is, but there's a... You have to press in. It is not acceptable to have a collection of people who don't get it. So, but you've got to work through some of those in order to I think part of it's a test, part of it is a distraction from the devil, part of it, of course, is the person. They need to be saved. Even weird people need to get saved. So God gives them a chance. Yep.
Obviously, we're up for seeing souls saved. Brand new converts, never even heard the gospel before. That's the number one thing. We also come across those that have been in church and they've taxed it.
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
That's not a problem as long as they're not starting to try to figure out how to get to third plane in this world. So
Yeah, sure. We witness, we have all kinds of people come. But the simple reality is, the first reality is, number one, we're not trying to empty other churches. That's not success. And then the other reality is people who are, if they are heavily religious, it's more difficult for them to move on, because they got to unlearn a number of things before they can learn some good things sometimes. So that's just a reality. But in convert, I mean, when I pioneered, it is exactly like Jesus says. It's like a dragnet. Any of you ever fish with a dragnet? You know what that is? A dragnet? And that's my kind of fishing. I am not a patient. Wait, what a great night. We spent 6 hours in the freezing cold getting bitten by bugs and caught nothing. Wow. Wasn't that great? I'm not that kind of guy. So I had a guy, he had a dragnet. We went out in Tasmania when I was pioneering, and it worked like this. This long net. Somebody on the shore anchored it. Somebody went out in a rowboat, or you can walk it out. He went out in a rowboat. It was really long, and he went out and he made a loop, and there are weights on the bottom of it. And then you let it fall, and on the shore, it makes like a big bag, and you pull it in, and everything that's in there, you pull in. Now, that was my kind of fishing, because there's no waiting. When we finish that, it's there. But Jesus says that is what happens when people get saved. I had in pioneering, I had people that were powerfully saved. I had people that really got saved, but they were struggling with, you know, my star convert who was the vice president's wife from Satan's Rider. She still smoked dope for a number of months. They had a grow operation under the house. You know, this was like, she's coming to church. This is like all she can do. And she had some issues. I had a nice old Baptist lady. I had a few kind of odd people. And then I had one religious couple. So I had all these converts that are a mixture. And that's the way a healthy church is. So you don't disqualify generally. I'm just saying what I teach guys is how just to try to minimize. You have very limited time. So you learn. It's a skill. That's why you work with people now. You learn in life who the time suckers are. There are people, you get near them and you can feel every ounce of energy being sucked out of your body. Well, you only have so much. Right? And you learn religious people, a very small percentage will make it. Hang with us. So I don't give them a lot of encouragement, and some I even discourage. Somebody else?
Alex had a question.
Oh,
earlier.
Can I ask it?
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, so the greatest way to learn some of this stuff is throw yourself into it. Some of these things that I talk about in theory, you work with people, you'll go, oh, I get that now.
Pastor, so people skills is the greatest thing that we can probably obtain, because it seems like it plays out in every area.
Well, no, I don't think it's the greatest. I think a miracle dimension from God is the greatest thing, because you need a miracle. I see guys that they don't have a lot of people's skills, but they can touch God in a miracle dimension. God can help them. People skills make life easier. They're not a key in themselves. Makes life easier. If you're on the job and you know how to get along with people, makes your life easier. If you are you know, pioneering, there is nothing impressive. Most of our buildings look funky. Our music is not impressive, or program, there's nothing. So when new people come, it's you. So you need to learn how to put people at ease. That's a skill. You need to learn how to talk to them to where they feel comfortable talking to you. That's a skill. You can learn that. Is if you want to learn people skills, you absolutely can learn it. You can get good at it. I didn't used to have that. I worked at it. Now my wife says I could have a conversation with a lamppost, you know. I like people. I go to the store, you know, buy a T-shirt, and I'm interested. I'm asking the guy working folding T-shirts. I'm asking about his job because it interests me. How long have you been doing this? Do you find this frustrating that you just did it and I'm going to come and mess everything up? You know. I want to know. How did you wind up with this job? You know, it helps if you like people. Yeah, but it's a skill. But I wouldn't say it's the greatest, no. Being able to touch God is the greatest. Being right with God, that would help.
What if you don't like people?
What if you don't like people? Yeah, then you got to ask. And that's I also had to pray for that. So that is the issue. If you don't like people, unless God does a miracle, you're going to make yourself and the people you come in contact with miserable. So something better change. So that's, I remember asking that Pastor Mitchell that very question. He's like, what if I don't like people? He said, pray that God gives you a love for people and a burden for souls. And I can honestly say that God has given me that. Now that is cyclical. That comes in cycles. I don't love people every day. Every moment of every day I wake up going, what do you need? But sometimes you got to, you know, be refreshed in God. But overall, I do what I do because I really like people. I like helping them.
What if you're, as in general, like, what if you're drawn to a certain group of people? Like, there's that you want to find yourself, like, preaching to, like... Like wanting to talk to more black people, or talking to Mexicans or black people,
I think if you're involved in outreach, in Prescott, of course, you are. It's going to be very difficult if you say, I only like witnessing to African Americans. You're going to struggle, right? So that. But of course, I mean, there would be things that people have a burden for, which is fine, but it's very healthy. Being involved in evangelism and working with people is very healthy because it forces you to people you don't normally. So I may prefer. What the challenge is, in my head, okay, I'm out witnessing, I have pastored in really big cities. You got to understand, I have pastored in places to where, in the area where we're outreaching, you know, it's like the population of Prescott will be out there. So, and then people come back from out there, there was no one open. Oh, there are thousands of people, like no one? Well, and what they meant is they only have faith for, you know, age 21 to 25, you know, have to be Hispanic, black, racial, financial. No, and so they go, So you got to expand your faith. But of course, then there are people that God gives them a genuine burden. They want to see young people. They want to see, you know. And then again, you use the judicious, you judiciously use time. If you have to choose, there are people that are more open, right? We have a saying in our fellowship for years, the key to revival is M&Ms, Mexicans and military. Our strongest churches are Hispanic or filled with military. That's a logical. That doesn't mean that no one else can get saved, but that's just using logic. So if you have a group of people, I have limited time, do you choose the 99-year-old? Do you choose the young person? There is logic involved. But the type of seed sowing that you see in the Bible primarily was scattering seed. So that means it wasn't like we put seed like this. It was you throw it. You never know who you're going to witness to. You never know who's going to get saved. No, less chance.
I've noticed in my own personal ministry of witnessing to people, there's quite a lot of people that I can actually get them to pray, but then it's almost like I have no idea what to do.
Yeah, so you that is part of a people skill of making people feel comfortable as well. So you can pray with them. Is can you have a conversation with them? Mm-hmm. That is that's a skill. You got to learn how to do that.
Does that also have to do with deciding what you spend your time doing? For example, on Friday, I went to the park and passed out some tracts, and a couple of people that I handed out tracts who prayed with me. But then there was a couple of people, they said, you already prayed with us.
Right.
And I didn't recognize that. But it was like, oh, okay.
So, but had you ever made the effort, or what happened? You never tried to get in touch with them, or what?
It was a couple of kids.
Right.
And no, I don't even know the name.
Yeah. Yeah, so there may be reasons why. So, but the whole idea of getting someone saved is to somehow draw them into church, which in some way you need a way to contact them, or all I know is I'm trying to make connection with people, so you make connection with people in the immediate term by taking them out for coffee, having them over for a meal, going out for a burger. Those are relational skills. I don't know about Jesus, but I like coffee. So that's a way that you can then, and if you're wise, involve other people. A few of us are going to go. You want to come? That's relationship. You form a relationship with people. Yep. Okay, that gives you enough to chew on for one day.